Mr. So Guan Bi, Rule 9. Mr. So, how was the security in this workshop like?
The security in the workshop is they want jaga around the Bengali jaga, right in front of the main gate, and another one is right behind the, they call it the Penang Lane, behind gate. And the most important, if you come in early morning, they don't search you. Then you want to go back, that's the time they will search your pocket, what you carry, and you have to prove that, what you got to take it out and show them. Usually most of them, they search and then they let go off. They let you go off because you don't think of taking anything off. Especially, you know, those cars don't, they are, most of the cars are always out of the road. And most of them, they converted, you know, all those cars, during 1941, 42, 43, the cars are all converted into charcoal, you know. Charcoal one, they run on charcoal. They use a sort of a big, sort of a gas chamber, like one gas chamber, another one a gas tank. They call it a gas tank. Another one as a incinerator, like, and then they keep on, you know, blowing the air in to burn the charcoal and turn into gas. Then when the moment gas into the gas, it goes to the gas tank. Then the moment gas into the gas tank, then you got to wait at least about half an hour before they can start the car. And most of them are converted into this condition and use it. They don't use petrol. They don't use petrol.
What if someone was found to have done something wrong or to have taken something? What kind of punishment would the Japanese do?
So far, I think during my term of service with the company or with the workshop people, I don't see anything happen there. Nothing happened there. And that's the time coming to the end of the war. Eh?
When did the cars come from?
The cars? Most of them belongs to the officers from naval base and lorries, services such as carrying goods up and down from Singapore, from town to naval base, you see. And all the officers' car, like the yellow flag, red flag, blue flag car, they come down for service. And sometimes others, and some other group, you know, the officers' car, they bring it down for service. And lorries such as carrying goods and all this, they also used to carry, you know, things such as ubi kayu, tapioca, they call it, and sweet potatoes from Labis. It usually goes up to Labis and collect it, buy it, and then bring it down.
Where did these officers get their cars from?
I think it's all of them are confiscated cars, eh? From the British and from the civilian during, after the war, they confiscated them, and then they just put their number plate on, their naval base number plate. And most of them are very good cars, you know, Rovers, Buick, Mercedes, Jaguars, and they call it Pontiac. I see they have their Pontiac also, and such as Austin, Morris. But most of them, most of the officers are, they use very good cars, such as Rovers, Mercedes.
Was it possible to slow down the service work so that you can sort of jeopardize the Japanese work in any way?
No, most of them, they come in for service only. We don't, do major jobs and all this. Eh? They come in and then they tell you to change the cylinder oil maybe and grease up all these joints. And then sometimes they ask you to check up the engine, tune up the engine. And major jobs are very few because they're not, you know, start to overhaul engines such as like now, you see, because the spare parts are very few. They try to, try and cut down as much repair as possible. That is what they do, you see.
But did the worker try to slow down their
work? No, I don't think, because they all follow according to the instruction of the foreman.
During the time that you were there, did any important or senior Japanese officers visit the
Oh yes, no. Once a while during the big day, see like big day such as like, you know, the emperor's birthday and all this, they come down and, you know, just walk around and see. That's all.
During the occasion like emperor's birthday, did they give any kind of talk to the people?
No. Just they walk around and come to the office and sit down because they are very happy about it, and that's all. Sometimes we just work or carry on working as well.
Were you expected to have any kind of celebrations or ceremony?
Oh yes. You sometimes they give I think half a day off or so then. And you come in the morning and in afternoon, say about what, 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock, you can go off. That is the only day you can go off.
In the morning, when you're in the office, do the Japanese expect you to have some kind of...
Oh yes, you must say good morning, so that's all. Ohayou gozaimasu, then you say, then you must bow down your head, and you say one by one. Then in the end, you can sit down your place and you wait for a while. Then, you know, all people will be settled down to work. Then they will detail all these people to work, you see. Especially those laborers, they will be at the workshop waiting for instructions. About 20 to 30 laborers are on there.
Those who will happen to repair, service the cars?
No, laborers is laborers. Fitters are fitters. See, those people who do repairing cars, he himself a fitter and another assistant to follow up. And the laborers is only to sweep the floor, clean up the floor. Anything what they want to carry, heavy things and all this, they ask them to come along. They'll be attached to the other end, the workshop there. Sometimes, usually they carry a lot of things. Remove this thing to the other end and that things like such as scrap, things they don't want, they will take it and put it in the yard.
During special occasions, did you have any kind of... ceremony or celebrations going on in the office?
No, nothing.
Only half a day off?
Half a day off and you can go off.
Were there any other kind of games or shows or outings organized by this Japanese company?
No, they don't do that. Usually you can go off on Sunday and that's all. You work full day on Saturday. There's no such thing as half day. You work from 7, you will pick up your bus, you board your bus at 7, you reach at your office at 8 o'clock. By the time 8 o'clock, you start work up to 4:30 to 5 o'clock, you go off. Then they go to line up, you know, to the gate there, and then the main gate they close and make a small passage for one by one to line up. Then you carry your tiffin carrier. They open our tiffin carrier and see whether there's anything there, and then after that you search your pocket. Then you can go out. At that time the transport is very, very scarce. We have to walk all the way back from Orchard Road, then I have to walk back to my place at Balestier Road, there, Tessin Song Road side. At that time we got no such transport.
But for your transport to work, they provided?
Yeah, provided. Sometimes the bus like break down and all this, we have to take our own transport back. That's like half day, you see, they don't give you transport back, you got to go back yourself.
During your time when you were working there, did you have any kind of pleasant or unpleasant experiences?
Oh, I think it's alright. So far, I work there normal to me because I'm young, I think. They don't treat me like others. I'm about quite young at the time, you see, so I think to them, just to them it's like normal, you see. I go to work, come back, just the same. I find no difficulties in working there. Very smoothly. Especially when you get your rations and you're very happy. You board the bus and go home and say, transport, return back and go bring back our rations, that's very important to us.
What was the standard of living during the Japanese occupation?
Oh yes, very high, it's very expensive. One pao alone costs you $20. One piece of pao, that big pao they call it, $20.
So the cost of living was very
high? Yeah, one packet of cigarettes would cost you around about $100. 20 sticks, Goa cigarettes. And then if you want to have a drink, it costs you around $5 for the drink. a cup of coffee, $5. A good drink, you see, if you have a copio, I mean $2.50, maybe $2.
For what?
Copio, $2, I think. If you want a serve with meal and something else, it costs you about $5. If you take plain one, it's cheaper. Tea is cheaper. See?
So how was living standard like?
And the bread, you know what sort of bread they give you? The sort of bread you cannot eat at all, actually. The bread they give you is usually they line up for ration bread, you know. It's out of, they call it out of soya beans, mixed with something else, and then it's very soft. It's not bad, actually, but it's just not like bread, like sort of bun, like, you know. And then you got to line up for your bread also, sometimes. Only once a day you can line up, you can buy only one.
For your own family, how are living conditions?
The conditions are alright, we are okay, because we get enough of rice rations as well as regular, I mean, work.
You mentioned that there was some kind of labor for the free labor for the Japanese.
Oh yeah, the free labor, that during that time, free labor, you know, this during coming to the end, 1945, yeah, 44-45, they come to the house and say, fill in your forms and see where you're working, first thing. They'll appoint one man who is the one of the head of the kampong, they call it that, one whole road, one old elderly man, he's about 70 to 75 years old. And then he will come to house, you see, you give your form to fill in how many persons in your house, and then how many are working, how many girls, how many married, and how many are not work. I mean, how many boys are working and not working, is it? They want to know. And if you are working with the essential company, like Essential Bhutai and all this like this, I'm working with the neighbor base, workshop, then they exempted me from taking free labor at night watch, they call it. They call it one star, two star, three star. The three star is the head of the whole group. Then comes the second two star. Then the third one is the one star. You see, every household has to, you know, supply them from 7 to not 7. They will just go up there and report to them first. After 11 o'clock, they will start to report to the three star. Then they go on patrol. Patrol till evening, morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. Then they go home. If those people are working, say they do their own business as well as, you know, they sell things, hawkers and all that, they have to volunteer to go for a night watch, they call it. Other than that, like I'm working with the essential department, so they don't ask us to go. And it was controlled by these three star. The three star will report to the police station.
Only one shift from 11 to 6?
Yeah, 11 to 6, that's how I know.
But you had to report at 7?
But not every day, no. Like, see, every household, say, once a week or twice a week, depends on the people, the volunteers, or they ask to go. Depends upon the amount of people in that row of street. And he got to patrol from this end to the other end. He don't go anywhere, see? The street, they connect patrol.
You had to report at 7 p.m.
Say 7 p.m. first.
To
the three star first. Then later, then after you report first, then you go back, take your dinner, then after later you go back again, about 11 o'clock, then go on patrol.
For a shift like from 11 to 6.
If you say you ask for you're going to ask for off because you're sick or anything, they will know to get another man to replace you during that hours, in that period of hours, you see.
During that time, how many groups will be patrolling the area?
Usually three or four. one shift there will be 11 to 6, 3 or 4 for a whole period.
How many people in one group?
Three. There's only one group, three. Only three, and then they walk up, down, three or four, I think, usually.
Three or four persons
only.
So not one night, only one group?
One group, because the whole street is there from Race Course Road, they patrol, you know, up to the end of Race Course Road. Up to the end of Race Course Road, then come back again. That's all.
What about the other streets?
No, they have their own street. On every street, they have their own volunteer, night watch. You see, like now Race Course Road, they have one and combined together with the Tessensong Road. So these two joined together, they will patrol from this Race Course Road area up to Rang Road, then come back to Tessensong Road, then back again, down to Balestier Road, here one round, then come back again to the police station and come back again, one round. That is all. And every street, they have their own what call you say, hitman, you see.
What was the purpose of such night patrol?
I got no idea. That time I was very young, see, I got no idea why they asked them to do it.
Were they given any rations?
Nothing. This is a volunteer only, free service.
During the later part of the occupation, did you know anything about the Japanese losing the war?
We know about it, but we still cannot hear from the radio, or we cannot get any radio to hear, because we're all censored, you see, they cut off, and then only can use only local one. You can see from the theatres, you can see from the theatre, you can see the news, always they win the war. And then that's the time when the B-29 comes in, bombing Singapore, then we know that they're going to lose the war.
Before the B-29 came, did you all know that the Japanese were losing?
No, don't know yet.
When the B-29 were coming, can you remember roughly what period was that?
It was coming to the end, you know, 1945, isn't it? 44, end of 44 to 45. That's the time the planes became coming in. And then we see papers that they have already shot down one B-29 somewhere in Johor. And they brought the exhibition, all the planes, the B-29 body, some of the gadgets belongs to the pilot, everything all there exhibited and let us other people see, you know.
When was that?
That was when they shot down one of the B-29.
In the later part of it,
they showed in exhibited in New World, then Great World. They showed that they have already shot down one of them, and then
the
pictures which they took, they caught the pilot. Some of them, they caught them and they took the pictures.
How did you all feel about the Allied bombings?
We know that we're going to take a lot of hard things because of we experience it, you see. So we got to make sure that we hide in a better place, you know, a deep drain or anything like that, but not below a big building or anything like that. Try to avoid big building.
Were you happy to see the...
Yes, that time we know that the deliberation is coming in, so we enjoy more. Yeah?
When the Japanese surrendered, did you know about that?
We don't know yet, until it was announced in the papers. Then the next day we know that everything was quiet. So we went to the office and said, you better go home, it's no use to come to work already.
Did you remember which date was the newspaper?
No, I can't remember. I can't remember, see like that. Unless I go through the papers and... It is sometimes 1945, right. And when I went, which office, I see nobody around. The bus don't come. I thought something wrong with the bus, so I went to office. And I found out nobody around, so I might as well go back home. And the jaga say, you better go home. Nobody comes to work. All locked up.
Do you remember whether that was after you heard the news of the surrender or before you heard?
Before that. You see, when they were going to surrender, but we know that 1 or 2 days then all the soldiers will come in, you see. Before that, they all locked up the thing first. The workshop all locked up.
Yeah. So you continue to go to work even after you knew that the Japanese had surrendered?
No, you see, the thing is that first I thought the bus don't come and fetch us because I thought something wrong with the bus, break down, anything like that. So you know very well, we cannot telephone, we just have to go up and see. And then I went to cycle and carriage at Orchard Road there and see, there's nobody around and the door was all on. And then Daga was saying that, you better go home, there's nobody come to worry. And then at that time, then after that the soldiers keep on coming. I saw a lot of soldiers coming in, Allied soldiers coming in. So I know it's soldier definitely is no more.
On the day that you went back to the workshop, did you know of the Japanese surrender already?
Yeah, we know about it. But we thought we can just get our things back, is it? Everything. That's all.
From the workshop?
From the workshop, what we left from there. Is it?
Did you read the news in the newspapers or did someone tell you the news?
No, it was announced on the radio. Through the radio that the Japanese surrendered. And after that, all the Allied soldiers come in already. So we'll be very happy that you see all the Japanese soldiers all, you haven't seen them anymore. They all keep to themselves in the barracks or what, so you see. They don't come out anymore.
So the news was published both in papers and
Announced on the radio.
What were your reactions when you received that news?
We are very happy that we I think that's the best time we can think of having a better life, which we have suffered.
Were you working up to the day that the Japanese surrender?
Yes.
So, can you remember what kind of attitude, what was the atmosphere like in the workshop then?
No.
Do you notice any changes in the
Nothing, no misbehavior, nothing. Only thing, they found out that everything was closed quickly. You see, I went there and said everything was closed already.
Before that? The workshop was closed?
Yes. I went there already, all the workshop was closed already. They said nobody's allowed to get in. This was under the British administration rule, BMA, they call it the BMA. They told the jaga, say nobody's allowed to get in, and this is a military installation. No one is allowed to get in again.
During your last few days working with the Japanese at the workshop in Orchard Road, did you notice any changes in their attitudes and their behaviors?
Nothing. They are all the same. They just pick up the things. I noticed that Mr. Suzuki pick up his things before he wants to go, pick up all the things and he say goodbye and that's all. And I think why he say goodbye, because everything is alright, normal. And then the next 1 or 2 days only you can hear the announcement through the radio that the Japanese have surrendered. Right?
Mr. Suzuki did not disclose
anything. He just pick out his thing and he say goodbye to everyone. He say, I'm going on back. That means we know something going on, but we dare not say anything. We dare not say anything bad about it because they are so good to us. See, it's not like others, you see.
He did not give you the reason why?
No, nothing.
What was happening in Singapore just before the British soldiers came in?
Oh yeah, there's a lot of big fights around. I think the Force 136, they call it the Force 136, the guerrilla. It happened in Rangoon Road area. They keep on going from house to house to those people who torture, you know. Those during the Jap times, they torture people. They catch them. They kill them off. They shoot them off. Especially in Rangoon Road area, I notice it. There's one, they make it a headquarters in Rangoon Road area. There's one near the end of Rangoon Road, there's one hotel, you know. But I got no idea what hotel is that. The communist Force 136, people came down. Then they caught all these people and they tortured them. And I saw quite a lot floating in the river, you know, the Rochor River, you know, this Rochor Canal Road, you know. This is Sarawi Road corner, Sarawi Road, the bridge there. I saw a few floating in the river after the Japanese surrendered. So everyone take their revenge. Some of them are informers, some of them are police, detectives. They are killed by those people, you know, they hunt them down. Yeah?
How did you know that they were 4736 people?
I heard from them, they say, see, it's a guerrilla people, see, it's local people using uniform. And they use a big cap, you know, they call it a big cap, there's one, the star, like, you see. Yeah, I heard from them saying, oh, there's one head office around there. The headquarters is there.
You heard from who?
From all those passers-by. You see, you better don't try and go around, around. They are catching these people who are really bad during their Japs occupation. I say, I'm not worried. But still, if they want to catch you and bring you in, what can you do? So you might as well hide yourself. You see? But they know, they got their people, and they really catch the right people. And they go for the right people. During the Japs occupation, they really do bad. The collaborators, they call it.
Did you personally see this?
No,
people?
No. We don't see them because they usually go in a jeep. They go in a jeep.
Have you met any one of them?
No. Yeah, they pass by, yes. I do. They used to pass by.
What was your impression of them when you saw them pass by?
Just it's the same like soldiers. Only thing, they are Chinese people, eh? Chinese, Malays, Indians, all nationality. They told the Force 136 people come down. No, they are really guerrillas from Malaysia. They come down.
How did the people know that they were Force 136 members?
Because they are the people. They mentioned themselves. They say we are liberation people for the people. You see.
Who did they told that?
No, they told the two people. You see, they are actually we thought they are Europeans. Allied soldiers, is it? So these Chinese, Indians, Malays, how say they wear their uniform different, is it? And they carry guns also, rifles, everything the same.
Did they announce over the radio that they were 4136?
No. Some of the people were saying that there's only the guerrilla people, that 4136 people.
There was no official.
No official one announcement. And in the end, they published in the papers that the people, they are guerrillas people. The guerrillas appeared in the papers in the what called the Straits Times. They said they are the people who comes down together with from Johor side. They come down.
Who wrote that piece of news?
I don't know. In the papers, I think it was in the papers. You check up and see whether it definitely is. And it's very strong around there. The headquarters is very strong there.
Do you remember the location of the headquarters? Which part of
the headquarters, they make it in somewhere in Ken Road, Rangoon Road behind. End of Rangoon Road and Ken Road, Mugi Road there. Around there. That's the place. I did not go there because I was very young. So we did not get in there.
Do you remember which building did they use?
A big hotel.
They use the hotel as their headquarters.
Yeah, headquarters. Yeah.
Besides these people, these incidents of people being killed, were there any other incidents happening before the British came in?
No. Because they don't come down until the British landed, Allied forces landed in Singapore. Then they come down together. They come down from Johor side. They come up from the what call is in Clifford Pier side. Eh? The others all come down from this side, and some of them by parachute also.
So those incidents that you mentioned, did they happen after the British came in or before the British came in?
Maybe some of them before the British came in, no? Because they know everything. Who are these people?
But when did the